Okay, well, I am going to get this presentation rolling, and if a few more people pop in from the previous session, then that's just excellent. So hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us today for the CIDR presentation. Before we get started, I just want to remind everyone that all the CIDR sessions are recorded and available from the CIDR site. So if you'd like to go back and review the session, or if you know somebody who couldn't be here today who would be interested, then by all means, please... Oh, I see Terry put the link in there already. I was just about to put... I'll put up the CIDR session link. Send them to the following link there. Oops, I put it in twice. Sorry, I'll do that again in a minute. Anyways, and the PowerPoint presentation will be there as well as the audio and Illuminate recordings, okay? So now I'd like to introduce today's presenter, Lara Jeanjedijk. Lara is an educational consultant who recently completed the research on the Connected Learners Technology Initiative grants that were done across the province of British Columbia. Now, Lara presented this research with Elizabeth Childs in a CIDR session last fall. Her other research recent projects include facilitating the BC Provincial Distance Learning Content Review process and the development of a provincial assessment rubric to assess online content and learning objects, which we'll be taking a look at today. Lara recently completed her master's degree in the Graduate Division of Educational Research in Educational Technology, and she's currently a doctoral candidate at the University of Calgary. Lara also brings with her 15 years of field experience in teaching, teacher professional development, and instruction and curriculum development in the K-12 system. In today's presentation, as I mentioned, Lara will be discussing the BC Provincial Distance Learning Content Review process and the assessment rubric. The presentation will be followed with group discussions, and depending on the interests of the group and the size of the group, we may utilize the breakout rooms in Illuminate to allow for some separate small group discussions, and then we'll bring everyone back to this room to review what was discussed. In order to use your audio during the discussions, just click on the microphone icon in the bottom left corner of the screen, and when you're finished talking, please click on the icon again to allow others to use it. If you don't have audio capabilities today, you can use the text box at any time to post comments or questions. So once again, Lara, thank you for agreeing to share your research with us. I know the last time you presented, there was just tons of discussion, and we all wanted so much more information from you and Elizabeth. So hopefully today we're going to provide you with the opportunity to discuss some of the points that you weren't able to cover last time due to the time constraints. So on that note, I will turn over the microphone to you, Lara.
Great. Thank you so much. It's Lara here. And yes, in our last discussion, it went by very quickly. So today I am planning and going to stick to a very tight agenda for myself so that we end up having a lot more time at the end for discussion, because that really is the richness of having the whole group here today. With professionals from all across Canada, we really have this opportunity to chat, and these CIDR sessions are such a great tool to do that. So my plan for the day quickly is just to get a quick introduction from the group. We all have sort of signed in and checked mics, but I would just like to know a little bit about background from each person. I'll give you a little bit of background in terms of the project of what we were working on in BC to let you know what's happening over on our side of the country. And I'd like to spend a good 15 to 20 minutes of this session doing some application and professional development with each other in some breakout groups, bring the whole group back together at the end, and then some final comments and questions. So that's the plan for the day. We'll see if we can get through that quite well. I do apologize for the slides that are up here on my screen at home, the PowerPoints. They're very large and easy to read, but they are very squished up here on Blackboard. In Illuminate, so they are a bit harder to read. If you have them and are able to download them at home, they would be much easier for you. First of all, I'd like to just quickly run down through the group and just have you give me a little bit of a very quick 30-second overview from each person about sort of what your background is with assessment and DL content. That way, when we're giving some examples and talking today, we can share your expertise and I can tailor our stories to sort of match with perhaps what your areas are. So I'll start with Katerina, and if you can just quickly move down through the group. I won't prompt each person. If you can just sort of follow down in line and give us a sense of what your experience is with content and assessment. Katerina's just logged in, so perhaps we'll start with you, Claudie.
Okay. My background in education is essentially teaching and training adults, parents, families who have children with special needs on a distance program. My level of interest would be more as a parent because all my children were on distance education programs, either because we were abroad or for personal interest for themselves. So I was exposed to the different and fascinating options that were out there abroad and in Canada. And as far as I think, that would be also just because I had experience. So maybe I was having questions and my children had questions and we were exposed to dialogue with institutions. That would be my type of connection with assessment.
Hi, Dennis here. I instruct via distance education six courses, four of which at the community college level and two at the undergraduate level for the Royal Military College in Kingston. And in terms of background with assessment, I've developed three courses, complete courses from scratch, and I'm working on my second program for distance delivery that's being developed as well for the Canadian Forces College in Toronto. So that's about it. And I'm a graduate of the Master's in Distance Education program at Athabasca University.
Julia, perhaps can skip down to you. I'm Jane Keefe.
Good afternoon. It's two of us here. My name is Keith. I'm an administrator at a K-12 school. I've taught some courses online in drafting and CAD, currently the Illustrate Administration. We are in a rural area of Manitoba, and at this time we are working with six other high schools and providing courses back and forth to each other, and we're looking for some examples of what other people are doing for assessment and for quality assurance and quality improvement.
Hello, I'm Mary Jo. I'm a classroom teacher, quite experienced, not necessarily that experienced in distance ed. I've been in and out of distance education over the past 10 or 15 years, going back to pre-Polycom days, now working with Moodle, and my interest is to try to learn how to make a course more interactive for the students.
Hi, this is Tanya Crawford with the Teaching and Learning Center at Ramsey Vincent University in Halifax. And my background is health education and a master's in distance education, formally. And hi, Wendy. And my level of interest, obviously, is post-secondary education, particularly helping faculty develop better assessment tools that they're using for teaching. And we also have created a rubric to assess our nominations for teaching awards. So it kind of broadens my interest in assessment, not just for teaching, but also for faculty development and continuing education. Thanks.
I see that Sue doesn't have a mic, but she posted in the text messages. So I'll jump in. I'm Terry Anderson, and I'm a faculty member at Athabasca University in the Center for Distance Education. I've been teaching online for, and on audio conferencing before that, distance education stuff, for about 15 years, and have a little bit of experience at the K-12 level, but mostly at colleges and universities.
This is Tim Winkelmans here. I'm a distributor, manager for distributed learning in British Columbia at the Ministry of Education. I'm not much engaged with content development right now, but for about 1994 to 2003, I was managing content development primarily for the Open School organization in British Columbia.
Great. Thanks very much to everybody. We have some other people that have logged in with some information on the chat line as well. Katarina, who's doing some LMS and content development, Julia, who's doing some teacher PD, and Sue, who put up that she's teaching and developing courses in Sri Lanka. Oh, Wendy, I'm so sorry. We'll pass over for you.
Not a problem. The joys of being a W on an alphabetized list. my name is Wendy Craiglin-Gauthier, and I'm coming from St. Yvette's University in Antigonish, Nova Scotia, on the other side of the country, Lara. I am an instructional designer working within the School of Education and continuing in distance education here. So I work with the current faculty members in the education department and in some of the undergrad courses as they move their own face-to-face content into a distance and online environment. My doctoral research that I'm doing right now just kind of started. I'm actually looking at the assessment of distance learning from the learner's perspective, and as I mentioned in just one of the other Scope forums just a few minutes ago, that my interest is going to be kind of interesting because of the fact that I'm actually working with teachers who normally are face-to-face with the K-12 system. And my background is also K-12. I am a teacher, but I've also spent 15 years in teaching adult learners as well. That is I, or me.
Thanks very much, Wendy. I spent a few months out in Nova Scotia myself, so it does feel a little bit like home. Thank you to everybody in the group. Well, we have a very diverse group, so I'm very much looking forward to our discussion, from designers to instructors to K-12 to higher ed to ministry people. We have a really wide variety of people here, which is excellent. We should have some good discussion and be able to provide some very differing views and concepts of what's going on out across the entire country. So I look forward to that. What I'd like to do to get started would be to just take a couple minutes and give you an overview of what the project actually was that we did in BC. I'll give you a bit of an overview. We'll talk about the tool itself, talk about what we learned from the project, summary of the tool of how I think it could be helpful for you. And then I really want to talk about the next steps, really focus most of the session on the application about what can it do for you, how can you use it, what type of discussion can it generate back for your community groups back in your areas. So that's where we're headed. I really don't like to do a lot of speaking, but I will, if you'll forgive me, spend about 5 to 10 minutes maximum here and just sort of give you an overview of what it is that we did so that we can talk about that in our groups. Some background for you from BC. Tim and I believe, are the only ones logging in here from BC today. Our sort of local situation in terms of content and quality has really sort of reached a peak right now, and there's a huge push for quality and assessment in our programs. Oh, hi, Jerry, you're from BC too. That's great. In our local areas, our DL programs are growing exponentially. They sort of started out with a, you know, maverick group of teachers that were really keen in technology. They've expanded greatly. Over the last few years, we now have client demand, which is growing and growing. More districts started out more of a rural perspective, and it's growing largely into urban areas as well. We have, as a result of all of that, we have a new provincial DL standards document which has been published to try and unite some of these courses together in terms of some provincial standards to make sure that there is a level of quality that's being met across the entire province. We have more and more content that's emerging from all places, whether it's locally developed or vendors that are producing it or online content, provincial content that's being put out by provincial companies. We have a whole bunch of new DL teachers that are now merging into the area of teaching that are no longer technology experts, those original pioneers. They're teachers that are wanting to get on board, but they're not trained in technology, they're not trained in the pedagogy of how to teach online, so the standards are becoming more and more important in our local province. We had the results of the Connected Learners report, which came out, which really focused on what was working and what was not working in the province and what we needed to address. Some of the big things that came out were addressing different types of learning styles for students, working on teacher PD in terms of what constructivist pedagogy meant and really making a distinction between distance education and distance learning. And then finally, this has all sort of resulted in the need that there's a huge provincial drive right now in assessment and quality. It's the emerging piece that we haven't looked at up until this point in time. We've been getting our teachers ready. We've been getting all the courses out to people. Now it's really time for us to step back. And as a result for that, we needed to put together some type of tool for how to assess it all. And that's where the tool that you are looking at today sort of came from. In terms of an overview, we called it the Provincial Content Review Process, and there were several different big key people that were involved with this, or parties. Our Ministry of Education and our DL branch was putting out all of the standards documents. We had a group of consortium teachers, which previously was called BC Ed Online, which has now merged into the Virtual School Society, which had a group of teachers across the province, like myself, who was working on building the rubric together and putting together some of those standards in conjunction with the research and the BC standards document. We collected together teachers from all across the province and trained a group of subject matter experts. We had science teachers that evaluated all the science content, math teachers that evaluated all of the math content, social studies, English, etc. We provided some provincial training seminars for all of those teachers and teaching them what was in the rubric and how to apply it. And we had three different rounds over the last year of content review where basically anything that was out there that was being used could be submitted, and we put it through a review process to see whether or not it was meeting the provincial standards. The net result was that there was a list of recommended content that was put out to districts. There was a list that was published. That content was made available through our provincial repository, which is called ERAC. And in that way, new teachers or teachers that were out there, they could have an idea about all of the content when they were trying to choose, okay, I would like to host a course online. What content is out there and what content actually qualified as good content in terms of the provincial standards and what didn't? That was the process that we followed. You know, that's a very short 2-minute synopsis of, you know, a year and a half of work that put together, so we'll certainly discuss that more as we're moving forward, but it gives you a sort of picture of where we started and what we produced by the end of it. Some of the key points that came out of the tool that we put together, you know, if we're going to assess all of this content across the province, what does it need to look like and what do we really want to focus on? And across all of the research and across the entire development team, the big focus that we had was that the online content was not just a textbook online. It had to follow more of a constructivist approach. So we had a very large distinction that was made between distributed learning, which is a very key buzzword in our province in BC, which is very different from distance education, the DE. These are not, you know, email courses where students are working at their own time back and forth. These are courses that we were looking for content that was in highly engaged, focused on interactivity, had lots of group and project work. It wasn't something where students were working in isolation. So to build the rubric, we took the standards document, we took all of the current research that was out there across Canada and a few from outside of Canada as well, and we put together a list of all the criteria that were emerging of what a good document would look like, and that's how the rubric was created. We came up with four key categories. There were all the technological requirements that a good course, a good piece of content would have. There were all the instructional design and the pedagogy pieces of what good content would have. There was a learner assessment piece, what key pieces of learner assessment needed to be in there to create effective learning in an online environment. And finally, there was all the course layout, the visual design, what really needed to be there to make sure that it was a piece of quality content that would enhance student learning to the best of its ability. And for a piece of content to be approved, all courses had to meet the standards in all four of the categories. We had decided as a team that if the instructional design and the pedagogy wasn't there, but the rest of it looked beautiful, it wasn't good enough. So that was a key piece for us as well. And in a nutshell, we put through about, there were probably about close to 200 learning objects, and there were probably about 200 pieces of content courses, full courses that went through the review process. The end result was that we actually have very few pieces of content that are being used that are fully approved. A lot of what we're using out there is just not meeting the standards of what research shows is good quality. So we did have a few good knit games. We have all of these provincial subject matter experts that are fully trained now and using a rubric and have the eye as to what to look for. The information's been shared out across all of the districts. We have a great awareness in what's happening district to district about what good quality and the standards should look like now. And we're guiding new courses and content that are being built toward that rubric for the people that are using it. It's available for people that would like to use that. The next steps, there's definitely across BC, we have a continued need to build better content. We have lots of it available, but not all of it is good content. We need to keep educating our teachers about what that quality looks like. We are working with vendors who are now submitting content and getting feedback on it before it's being released or published across BC, which is great. And we're now at the point where the rubric that we sent to you in the beginning, we've differentiated it now. We're now breaking it down to separate a different assessment for learning objects versus content pieces or segments versus entire courses. And that's where we're headed as the next step for it. The rubric itself is very detailed and very lengthy, so we'd like to sort of break out and have some discussion on those types of things. The project itself across BC we felt has been very successful. There was a lot of discussion that was generated across the province that was very useful for people about what good quality looked like. And up until now, we've really focused on the teaching part. We've really focused on getting it out to people, but we haven't focused on the content. And we know now that we need both of those pieces to equal a quality program. So at this point, I'm going to stop speaking. And we really want to give the opportunity for the group to break out and really discuss some of this. We have three different groups. I'd like you to sort of indicate to us which one you'd like to go in. At the top of your nav bar there are some polling features where you have letters A, B, and C. If you would like to go into the group to discuss the assessment tool itself in detail, the link was provided for everybody and you can download that. You could indicate that you would like to go into group A. For people that would like to discuss more about quality and content themselves, about what's happening in their local situations, we can talk about what's happening in comparison to BC. That would be group B. And the third group would be assessing assessment itself and content. What's happening in your provinces, what's happening in your districts and your schools, and what are issues for you. At the end, we'd like to pull the group back together again and share a little bit about what was happening in the three groups. So I'm going to stop at this point in time and ask if there are any questions so that we can get into more specifics. And at that time, I'll ask you to choose one of those three questions. Just check a happy face or a thumbs up from everybody if you're okay or you're understanding where we're going.
Go ahead, MJ and Keith, if you have a question, click on the microphone.
Just curious, we were talking about the assessment and the quality of the course itself. Is BC looking also at the teacher evaluation component at the same time?
That's a great question. From the provincial level, we were looking at the content to try and provide a bank of content for the province that we could give to teachers to say, okay, here it is, this is what already meets provincial standard. the teacher prep is done more at the district level and at the university level, and that level of discussion is still emerging. RDL development in the province here is very much in an emerging stage, and there are those pieces that are happening, but right now, from my point of view, they're very much in isolation from one another. Is that the case where you're at as well?
Yes, it is. It's very difficult to formalize it yet, and I guess a complicating factor is if a teacher is in another facility, who actually is an administrator? Who has the authority or responsibility to do that quality assurance?
That's a great question. The group, that would be a good question for the group in the discussion breakout rooms here. You know, for our piece here, we were looking at content itself, but you're right. You know, this is one piece of the puzzle, and it's not one that needs to be done in isolation, and we certainly need our provincial groups wrapping their heads around that. Tanya, I see you have a hand up.
Hi, David. Thanks, Lara. My question focuses on how did you get teachers, faculty to accept the standards, to actually adopt them and use them and work towards developing courses, or maybe you're not at that point yet, I don't know, you know, to believe in them and to make it work?
I'd say right now that that's still an issue that's emerging. With the provincial subject matter experts, when we brought them in for the provincial training teams, it was widely accepted. You know, the teachers that are out there, they really know that there is a wide variety of the types of content that are there. And we know that to increase student achievement, we need to be providing the best types of content possible to provide, you know, effective student learning. And some of that's being done and some of it's not. The bottom line is that teachers, especially new teachers coming in, they just don't have the time to go and look through all these pieces of content to choose what they're going to use before they start a course. So the principle was that if we could do this at provincial level and provide people a list of content that was already approved, we would be working towards those effective standards and we could work on the teacher PD side separately. And that way it would save time for everyone involved. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. And I guess my thought, too, is that I work with faculty, and I'm concerned about their perception of infringing on academic freedom to be able to design content how they think it should be designed, regardless of whether it's good pedagogy. Thank you, Lara.
That is definitely a question, and the purpose of the rubric was not to, you know, stomp on creativity. But in terms of teaching online, it was meant to be more of a guide that if you would like to put content up in an online environment, it's not just a textbook online, it's not just a matter of uploading your regular sheets that you're using in a face-to-face course, that there is a difference in pedagogy. And it's important for the teachers to know what those differences are and what it should actually look like. And in having those subject matter experts going through the training and actually looking at content and applying the rubric, it was very, you know, we tried not to steer the group in any way in telling them what we thought content should be reviewed as. It was done as a double-blind review process. And, you know, in more cases than not, we had it set up where two people were each looking at a piece independently, and very rarely did we ever have to send it to a third person. There really wasn't a lot of disagreement. Terry, I think I'll pass the question over to you.
Thanks, Laura. Well, that's a very fascinating idea. Maybe I'm taking time away from the discussion groups, but one of the things about online learning is, of course, the malleability, the openness, you know, especially with the idea of the users and other teachers collaborating and creating, and so the content becomes dynamic and changes all the time. And so you said that it's quality content isn't just an online textbook, and yet I guess I wonder how one makes sure there is the sort of the quality there, yet allows it so that it can be changed. I know in distance ed we've always had that, where we create teacher-proof product packages, you know, that can't be altered or changed. And yet, if they can't be altered or changed and improved on the fly, then they sometimes don't meet a lot of teachers' needs either. So how can you assess it in the absence of knowing how it's actually going to be used?
Well, that is a great question, because you can have any great piece of content or poor piece of content, depending on what is added in or taken out by the teacher. Obviously, by the time of inception, it will change. our point in this particular project was looking at a piece of content in itself as it stood with no teacher intervention whatsoever. And in that case, did it have engagement? Did it offer different types of learning, assignments for different types of learning styles? Did it offer capabilities for interaction? Did it follow any constructivist pedagogy at all? We were looking for more of the shell, the guideline, and to have the teachers, the actual application then, to add in or change that, we didn't mean for the rubric to be prescriptive in that sense. Obviously teachers can change things or add things in or, adding value or taking away value at the other end. We can't judge that, but we can try and teach about what good quality teaching looks like in an online environment, and that was more the focus of the training. So I'm not sure if I answered that well for you. There's several different strands of ideas all there at the same time.
Well, thanks. It is a story of my life, too many strands and lack of clarity, but thank you.
MJ and Keith?
I have a question about one of the terms you're using. You're talking about using a list of approved content, and as I listen to people talk, and my understanding of what that means is changing. I don't know if it's a list of provincially approved textbooks, or if it's a set of complete course materials, or if it's prepared teaching materials that are in the form of a teaching unit that could actually be accommodated by whatever variety of technology that a school or division has. So if you could clarify that, that would be good.
Yes, thank you for your question. I know, there's so many pieces of information coming in over this entire project that probably is not very clear. When we're talking about publishing a list across the province, we were talking about, here's a list of learning objects, that will help create a course that is interactive. We had a list of different course segments. If you were doing a unit just on this, if you were doing a specific piece on algebra, here's all the ones across the province that meet the standards document and the criteria. In addition, there were also a list of courses. So we're not talking about textbooks in any way, shape, or form. We're actually talking about pieces of online content only. Learning objects, course segments, or entire courses of themselves, all of which were meant for online content only, nothing textbook focused. From that, they weren't meant to be prescriptive at all, that this is the one you must use. It was meant to be, here's a list of everything across the province. Here's a list of what you have to choose from, and it was up to teachers and districts to choose from that list what they felt best met their needs. What it was meant to do was to take away from the big bank when you go into a repository of saying, here's 1,000 different pieces of content, choose what you want. Teachers just don't have time to go and make sure they meet all of the IRP objectives and that they are good quality pieces of content. It was meant more of a filter.
MJ and Keith just had their hand up a moment ago. Did you have a question?
No, I think you've answered it now. So we're not just talking about a series of learning objects, right? And Mary Jill?
And also, who generates these course statements?
Laura, you don't have to put your hand up. You can just talk.
Sorry, I think I hit the wrong button when I was moving there. The piece about the segments. Where did they come from? They could be from homegrown by local teachers, by districts. They could be put out by vendors. They could have been put out at provincial level. They could come from anywhere. As teachers, being a K-12 teacher in the district, when I go to try and choose some type piece of content to put up online, their repositories are overwhelming. This is meant to be just a list of where you could go and find things and know already that they were approved. Jerry had asked a question in the chat about where do you find those approved pieces. That piece is still actually evolving in BC. The list was meant to be published out to all provincial members, and then they were to be posted in ERAC. Because the project is still ongoing, and that part is now resting with the Virtual School Society.
Terry had a question earlier on about could a textbook pass the approval rubric, and then I think it was Sue had something similar in a discussion about just a picture or a photo.
But picture or photo definitely could be something that could be used. We haven't gotten to the point where we've tried to evaluate any of that type of stuff yet. We're looking at more big pieces of content. A learning object, when we're talking about that, might be more something where you would watch an online experiment for a piece of science content, or you'd be looking at a demonstration of a specific type of math problem. In terms of one item objects, we haven't looked at those at all.
Oh, I don't know if you saw there. I love Sue's question. Do the teachers get a chance to rate the products, so to speak, or the learning objects after using them? Will there be that kind of feedback in the repository?
Again, the repository piece is still resting with the Virtual School Society, and that piece is not finished yet. So what the original intent was is that when teachers went to that repository, they would have a big list of content, and beside it, it would indicate which pieces were approved and which pieces were not approved. And following that, there would be a space for teacher feedback to say, I use this piece of content, but you should know that if you want to use it, you need to add in A, B, C, and D to make it better. That was the original intent. Whether that will happen in the end, I'm not sure, because that's still being developed, and I'm not involved with that part at this point in time. So that was the original intent and where it was heading. It was meant to be an interactive place for teachers to access it, provide data back and forth to each other, and to be able to know some information about the content before they chose it. Very often right now, we have these DL teachers that are just saying, well, I'd like to try it. I'll try it this year for the first time, and they know nothing more about it than that. And that's a scenario where we're really running into trouble in BC, where we have a brand new teacher with a piece of so-so content, and all of these students that are going up online, and it's not necessarily a great learning environment for different learning styles, and that's what we're trying to prevent against. Well, it seems to me that with the size of the group here, and perhaps with the discussion as it's evolving, perhaps instead of moving everybody to the breakout rooms to save some time, we could just go through the questions as they're existing on the board here. Through question number one with the group, instead of moving anybody, is there anybody that has questions about the assessment tool itself or anything that you would like to discuss?
Sorry, Tanya, I think we've lost your audio again.
Hi, yes, sorry, I clicked too quickly. My question about the rubric is, how did you determine the content for each of the standards?
Great question. What we did is we took our provincial standards document, which had already outlined a lot of criteria that were expected across the province, and with that we had a research team that went and looked at all of the recent Canadian research across Canada in terms of answering the question, what does effective learning look like in an online environment? And we took all of the data from all of that research and we compiled it into lists, and we sort of looked for patterns. What needs to happen over and over again? You know, what does the research keep saying that matters? And we compiled all of that information into those four categories. And that's how the list was derived.
Thank you. That's a similar process that we used, actually. We've just finished creating draft guidelines for our faculty to use in developing or redeveloping the course, a face-to-face course, or designing a distance course from the very beginning that doesn't have a face-to-face, isn't based on a face-to-face component. And they are very much at the preliminary stage. Now we're looking to identify some of those specific pieces. We haven't gotten to the point of doing a rubric yet, and I'm not sure we will, because again, rubrics are, you know, sometimes not as effective as they could be. But I think that it's good to see that, you know, we're on the same page as far as the approach and identifying those key elements. That's what we call them, the essential elements for designing distance courses. And what it is a framework for faculty to use to develop their course. And then they can add the bits and pieces that they think to make it a unique course on their own. And kind of like a menu, they choose from it. And here's the minimum things that a course should require. Now here are the options that you can choose. So it does give some variety. But I think a rubric would be helpful for us too, to assess are trying to achieve with distance learning. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much. I agree with you. I think the term rubric is a difficult one because it implies assessment. And in our case, it was also meant as a guideline as well. But we had to sort of go the route of providing it as a tool or an assessment tool because we had to have provincial people, you know, all the teachers and the provincial team across the province that could use something as a standard from which to evaluate. And because we were doing the double blind review process, we had to make sure that it was standardized to the point that everybody understood what the criteria was. And again, it's not meant to be prescriptive per se, but more of a guideline as to if you're going to build something and make it the best possible learning model, this is what you should think about including. So thank you for your question and your perspective. Yes, our approach is the same, and it is nice to know that we're doing the same thing across the province. There's another question here from Dennis, and then there are a few also in the chat line that I haven't forgotten about here, and I'd like to get to you next. Dennis?
Thank you, Laura. I was just wondering if, because you're dealing with K-12, if your rubric was applicable to both the cognitive and affective domains of learning. I'm presuming here that in the K-12 system you have courses that are focused more on technological development, those who use effective learning as opposed to cognitive development. And was your rubric universal in looking at course content from both of those domains?
Another great question. Thank you for those. One caveat being our provincial document is a K-12 document. The only content that we have assessed thus far is content from grades 7 through 12. So at this point in time, the rubric has not been used in any way, shape, or form for elementary school nor for higher ed. In terms of cognitive development for secondary level, it seems to be working and it seems to be applicable. For the rest, it was not structured at this point, and it is very much a document in draft, but we feel that it's working well enough at this point in time that it should be shared out to people. Thus, answer your question, Dennis?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, one of the online questions here was, I have to scroll back up here. How long does the evaluation process take from start to finish for submission to approval? From Sue. Thank you, Sue. The answer to that question, it's quite long. Generally, it took about up to 4 to 6 months. We would put out a provincial call across the province for any vendors, teachers, anybody that we'd like to submit the content. We gathered all of the content together, and for each submission, we generally had sort of 80 to 100 pieces of content. The very first one that we did was all the math content across the province. The second one we focused on was doing all the science content, and the third one was looking at First Nations content, any other different pieces that sort of existed, humanities, that type of thing. And once we'd gather it all together, then we'd put out a call for provincial experts across the province that would like to participate. We brought them in. We trained them all how to use the rubric, how to interpret it. We spent a full training day in Vancouver doing that with them. We sent them back on their own with different pieces of content to review. They reviewed them blindly. We took a look from two different people for a blind review what the results were. If there were discrepancies, we had the group meet after the fact and discuss. Final reports were created. In some cases, it went out to a third reviewer if need be. And at that point in At that point in time, we provided a synopsis to the vendor or whoever it was that submitted it with a list of all recommendations and feedback from the reviewers. From that point in time, so we had a list of recommended or not recommended or recommended with these changes. In that case, sometimes it was sent back to the vendor or person added more changes in if they wanted it put up on the provincial website. In BC, we have a provincial website for all online courses called Learn Now BC. And for people that would like to go in and take a course from any place in the province, they can go and choose where those courses are. In terms of the content, content that the teachers use, they could go to the list and choose what course they wanted to use for that. So it was a very long and drawn out process, and in most cases it took sort of 4 to 6 months. The second and third rounds of review were shorter. Once we had the provincial team people that were trained, a lot of the people that came on board were teaching in more than one subject area, and that process became a lot shorter after the fact. That was Sue's question. Anybody else would like to bring one up? I'm going to address Wendy's question here then. Her question in the chat board, if you'd like to follow along, was, is the same rigor involved in face-to-face? It seems that we in distance ed have to prove and reprove the value all the time. I agree. I think right now we're under scrutiny with DL and with a huge drive and push towards accountability and assessment, we really need to show that what we're doing is working. I think also there's more of a risk that we have in DL because we know that learning style is greatly affected. Not all learners learn well in an online environment, and we know that some of the keys are interactivity, engagement, and the teachers that we have, the big caveat at this point in time is that they're not trained in constructivist pedagogy. So we need a sort of that patch right now to make sure that that's happening. As we move forward, I would envision or would hope across the province that that's being addressed more at the teacher PD level. Right now that's not the case, so in our province we need to provide tools and ways for teachers to get the best quality content and it help them through that process. I'd like to know what's happening in terms of question 2 or 3 for the rest of you across Canada. What's happening in terms of discussions with quality and assessment for you? Anybody like to jump in? Go ahead, Howard. Julia, perhaps we'll have you jump in here and then we'll try Howard again in a moment.
Hi everyone, I hope you can hear me. Can someone give me like a smiley face if you're actually hearing me? I didn't do a sound check. I've been running back and forth between 2 rooms and 2 webinars. But this is of great importance in my state in New Mexico. I personally do K-20 professional development for online teaching and learning, a graduate certificate program out of New Mexico State University, and various grant-related programs throughout the state. We've recently, a Cyber Academy Act was passed. We have an initiative called Ideal New Mexico, where they're looking at K-20, taking everything online. Immediate focus is on high school. So we have a lot of groups trying to transition face-to-face classes to online classes. You know, a lot of drama going on in statewide LMS, statewide web competency. There are so many issues that are going on right now as far as one of the most pressing issues is we've been using Evento learning courses and having seen some poor, not success stories, I guess you would say. We had one semester just recently where not a single student has passed those courses. So, you know, I don't know what the questions are on that. Are they too rigorous? There seem to be more rigorous than any face-to-face class that I've ever taught or attended myself, but that's another story. But all of, you know, the assessment types of things are really important. Some of my questions are, is some of what you guys are doing, it sounds amazing, this is an amazing opportunity to share, but one of my questions was, do you have like a class of an exemplary class that meets all of your criteria that you would be willing to share with us so that we would be able to see what exactly that looks like? One of the successes that we've had with some of our groups is taking the teachers in to go and look at each other's courses, and then it gives them ideas to make sure that they're meeting all of the standards. So anyway, a little bit of background and my question.
Thanks very much, Julia. Can I have you just summarize again, just in a sentence or so, the specific question you'd like addressed? I was also trying to switch over and help with the moderator here with Terry as well.
No problem. I guess it has a bit to do with kind of sharing what you all are doing and if you are doing that at some level, and we would be willing in turn to share at some point as well if that were to be amenable to folks. But it's been very helpful for our teachers to actually see each other's work and each other's courses in order to make sure that they are meeting all the criteria that are addressed in our rubrics and stuff like that. But if there are folks out there who are creating amazing, high-quality courses, it would be of benefit to us to be able to see some of those courses and all of the components and what a high-quality course that meets this rubric looks like. Is that a possibility?
The short answer is yes, absolutely. Yes, we could, you know, provide access for you, and definitely I think it would be warrant having some offline discussion, and yes, we'd be happy to share everything that we have. You know, coming from the K-12 system, I'm not a teacher who, you know, believes in having people hoarding all of that material in their room. That's just not what effective teaching is. And when we have quality and when we have material that really is enhancing student learning, I think we have an obligation to share that, which is why we're here today. This document, you know, it's not in a format now to be published or in any way, shape, or form. It is very much an emerging document. And they, you know, it's something that we are even working on at this point in time. It's a draft version, and, you know, there will be changes moving forward to it as technology changes as well. But I think it's worthwhile sharing because it does have application and does have value for people's local situations. And if nothing else, it is a great point to stimulate discussion with your local faculty groups about what good quality looks like. I hope that answered your question, Julie. I'm going to pass over to Howard here. I think Howard may be having some issues with the mic here. So I'm going to put up my email contact up on the screen here, and it has my, I'll put my cell phone number also in the chat line. And if anybody has any questions or would like any further follow-up, any material to use for your local situations, I'm more than happy to provide that or do any work that you need to help out there. At this point in time, up on the white screen, hopefully if everybody can give me a smiley face if you can see the contact list. Great. I'm up at the top there. That is my email at the university. And there are two other sort of key players that were involved in this project. And those were Dr. Elizabeth Childs, who worked doing a lot of work doing the research and background and putting the rubric together as well. And Dr. Barry Carbel, who was the director and organizing and doing all the provincial calls and getting all the vendors to submit. So those three people are involved as well. You can definitely are free to contact them directly as well. And lastly, I guess I should just open to any general last questions that you might have. Our hour has gone by very quickly here, and I'm sorry if I've missed anybody else's questions. So open floor, any of the things that you would like answered.
This is Julia again, and I'm just wondering if anyone's going to be here in the U.S. at the NACL Virtual School Symposium Conference in, I think, October in Phoenix.
Laura, this is Tanya Crawford from the Mount Vincent University, and my question is, where do you go from here?
That's a great question. The simple steps or the simple answer, you know, we're looking towards the next generation of the rubric, having a separate assessment tool for a learning object versus a course segment versus an entire course. Definitely focusing more on teacher PD. Okay, we have the tool. We know what good quality looks like. We need to make sure that teachers are talking about it and that that discussion is happening at district level. If we have districts that are providing online content, how do they know? If the district administrators are not having discussion with the teachers, how do you know that the piece of content that you're using is quality content? If we're always focused on that end result of student achievement, are we using the best piece that we could be to get the results out? And if not, why not? That conversation needs to happen. And then lastly, at the provincial level, we really need to keep working towards having that content accessible to teachers. So ERAC, our provincial repository, we definitely need to keep working there and keep making sure that that message gets out to all of the people that are actually working in the districts. Where can you go to access? How do you know what's approved? How do you know what's not approved? And having that teacher sharing that blog going back and forth about what's working, what's not working, and having that access so that people can choose. Those three pieces are the ones that I see as being really important next steps.
Great, thanks. My last question is that repository accessible to non-BC, for example, myself? Could I go in and look at what is in and where is it held? Or what is the tool that's used to compile the learning objects?
That is a great question. My answer before would have been to you, our province has just gone through a change over the last couple of months, and we've had a few different pieces of our, I guess, the different agents that we're working across the province to make that happen. They've merged together, so there's still a little bit of settling out as to who's providing access at this point in time. And the short answer is I don't really know yet who that will fall upon, because we've had all of these different sections of ministry that have merged together. So if you would like to send me your email, I definitely can find out for you. It used to be that everybody across BC who was using online content, they were members of BC Ed Online, which was our provincial group for teachers, which was an online professional community that connected everybody who was online across the province. That is now taken over by Virtual School Society, and I'm not sure where that all falls out because I'm not involved in that side. But I can definitely find out for you and get you that information.
Well, we're coming up on the hour, and I like what Howard just said. Yeah, it would be positive if we could all share it, and it seems to me that's the point of the Open and Distance Learning movement here. So hopefully that will be available to us. And I want to thank you again, Laura, for sharing your time with us and sharing your research and work with us here in CIDR. The recording, as I mentioned before, is going to be available on the CIDR website. And the documents, the rubric and so forth, if you didn't get a chance to view those prior to the presentation, they are also available from the CIDR website. So take a look there, and you can scan over the rubric or keep it on hand for your own use. And I will say goodbye now. I don't know, Laura, how much, if anyone has a final question for you or how much time you have, but I'm turning off the recording now. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, I know there were a few questions that were on the chat line as they were scrolling by that I may have missed, so I'm so sorry if we have, and I'm very welcome to stay and answer any questions that anybody has. So feel free, the mic is yours.
All right, so Dennis here. I do some work with OntarioLearn.com, which is the consortium of 22 community colleges in Ontario, and one of the initiatives that they have undertaken is they have basically it's a checklist that anyone designing content for online delivery must comply with before their content can actually be mounted in any of the community college websites. And having designed a couple of courses for community colleges in Ontario, I found that checklist quite helpful in ensuring that I met all of the criteria that they'd set out. I don't know if you have looked at what Ontario Learn has been doing, but it's part of your research, but it certainly might be worthwhile. The unfortunate thing they don't do is a follow-up, as you're doing now, to see whether or not the online delivery is actually being accomplished according to the standards that they would like to see or accommodate.
That sounds fantastic, Dennis. I would love to have a look at what you're doing at the point where we built the rubric. We're sort of looking a year and a half ago, so anything new that's come out since that point in time definitely warrants our scrutiny for the second round or next generation of this document. So if you have a link or if you were able to email it to me, I would very much appreciate it. And equally, we can share out everything that we have on our end to you. Thanks for that. It's interesting that several of the provinces are all going through similar detail. You know, Alberta is definitely far ahead of where we are in Alberta, or in BC, sorry. And I'm not sure of the general perspective in Ontario. Would you like to sort of give us a synopsis of what's happening there?
Well, I'm not really in a position to look at what the ministry is doing. I work as basically an independent contractor for a couple of community colleges, Algonquin and Loyalist College specifically. It's just that I've been designing some content for them and have been required by their consortium to follow certain standards that they've established for the design of that content. I threw up the URL. Is www.ontariolearn.com, but it is administered to, as I understand it anyway, to a certain extent by the Ministry of Education in Ontario. But once again, as an instructional designer, I found this template that they have put together, or checklist, if you will, quite useful.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you for the link. You know, between what's happening in Alberta and BC, and I know that there's a lot of work going out in the Atlantic provinces as well, you know, there's a lot of really good Canadian content coming. It's just a matter of sharing it so that people have access and, you know, that we have also have an awareness of what's going on. It seems that we have all of these different provincial groups reinventing the wheel, so these forums are really important for sharing. Howard.
This one last time, hopefully I'm being heard. I'm the new web-based course development consultant for Manitoba, new to the job for just over a month, but we've got some direction here from our deputy minister to go back and look at what we've been doing for the past 5 years and look at ways of further developing, evolving that, supporting that, changing what we're doing. We're having some look at our policy that we set 5 years ago surrounding distance learning and how we achieve it. And we're definitely looking at ways to improve support to the field as far as the teachers delivering the courses and also in terms of building better quality courses. The model in Manitoba right now is that the provincial jurisdiction naturally makes the or designs several of the courses and makes them available for free to the school jurisdictions, and then they can take those and deliver them as they see fit. There's also a number of schools and teachers out developing their own content as well. So the thing is starting to evolve and broaden quite quickly, and I think the sense is we need to have a clear understanding of where we want to go.
That sounds similar to the position that we were in, Howard, you know, where there's all these different pieces that were evolving across the province, and there was a need not so much to standardize and tell people what they had to use, but just to look at, you know, is the quality there and should this really be used in a classroom setting? What's happening, you know, you were talking about the province putting out course content for the rest of teachers. What's happening in terms of judging that quality of content with the homegrown pieces? Is there any discussion around that, or is there a move towards some type of standardized document?
I think what's happening right now, and part of the discussions we're going to go into, as a matter of fact, we have a meeting coming up on Monday where we've asked people from some different educational jurisdictions at K-12 to come in. We've got some superintendents, some assistant deputy ministers, some school principals who deliver courses in their schools, consultants from inside the department, representative from the Manitoba Teacher Society, to talk in generalities and find out what everybody's perception is of the needs. And I think we're going to move forward from that point. Right now, though, courses developed provincially go through a process. It takes us up to a year and a half to develop a course where it's developed by a subject area expert that we contract, usually a teacher or a retired teacher. Then we have it reviewed by someone else. Then we have it made available through our provincially licensed Blackboard system. However, courses and materials developed at the school level, unless they are a compulsory course that is mandatory for graduation credit, do not have to be evaluated. And I think I hear some concerns around just how the whole thing is just opening up and what are the standards.
Well, there was generally some discussion about that in BC. It sounds like, you know, you're moving towards the same sort of position that we are when we started this project. The reason that it was started in BC, there was a provincial needs assessment study that was put out across all districts to all personnel that were involved with DL programs. That would be facilitators, administrators, teachers, developers. And some of the key parts that came forward were that people really didn't have an idea about what good quality would look like. And that's where we got going. I think the document perhaps that we have and as it exists right now in its draft form may be helpful for that group in looking forward. Alberta Learning definitely has some great material that's out there. The link that we have here from Ontario, definitely from Howard, I think would be very helpful as well. And I know that the Atlantic provinces are doing a lot of work too. So we're all sort of in the same position, just different pieces, you know, further or lesser along the same scale. What do you see as the key issue that are out there for you right now?
I guess Yes, I'm holding back any comments until after we have this meeting on Monday with the with our partners in this thing, because I really want to hear the feedback from the field, because that to me is what's most important. And I'm waiting to see what's going to be there. I think quality of content is one issue. We've kind of heard that before. I think the other piece is we can't seem to develop and get content out to the schools quickly enough because of the model that we're perhaps using, or we need to ramp that up or make improvements. So, but those are just a couple of the things I'm noticing so far. But again, we haven't had the forum yet.
Yeah, fair enough. I think there's a lot of discussion happening here too. I know the last few meetings that I went to with the consortium groups here, they were really talking about trying to create sort of a Western Canadian, you know, alliance or agreements between that, where there was sharing of materials and resources between provinces as well. That whole piece about having a timely course or that, you know, just-in-time material is huge when there's all the cost of development. So I would really like us to see us move towards a type of Western or Canadian consortium where we're sharing that material. The fact that people in Ontario can't resource ERAC from BC, that's an issue to me as an educator. I would like that access to be open. I'm not really sure why we can't make that happen, and I think this discussion is really important for that. MJ and Keith had a question on the board here. Is what is the difference between a face-to-face courses and DE courses in terms of evaluation? I'm not sure I understand the question exactly of what you mean by evaluation. In BC, we have very few courses that are distance education courses now, which would mean that they're sort of email-based. You get the material, you send it in. Whenever you're done, you're working in isolation. The courses that we're talking about in BC are distributed learning. There is a sense around our provincial standards document that we are working towards having courses that are interactive with engagement, where there are group projects, people are online either synchronously or asynchronously or in as a combination of both. In terms of evaluating those, that's what we're talking about in terms of the assessment rubric, is looking at those type, not distance education at all. Is that what you mean for MJ and Keith? And just to follow up again with the question of DE, we've long had DE courses across the province, but this particular rubric or this particular examples of what we're talking about, they're not the DE courses, they're just the distributed learning. And Jerry, you're exactly right. The sharing, and you know, it really comes down to dollars to publishers. You know, we are getting to the point where we're making some provincial licensing agreements, and I think from my perspective that's definitely going in the right direction. What are your opinions there, Jerry?
Sorry, I'll turn it down a bit. My opinion is that we need to make a facility to share things across jurisdictions and even other countries, but it's hard to do other than, even with resources developed with provincial funds, we don't do it. We have to pay for stuff that's developed by our own funds, by our own government. So I don't know what the answer is. I'd like to make it broadly available, but how you do that, I'm not sure.
I think we have some interesting examples that are opening up with MIT and with Harvard sharing resources openly now across the web. Those are definitely some big key players in the industry that are opening up and changing perspectives for people. Those are two examples that I'd really like to follow closely. Both interesting examples of what's happening or what could happen. Anybody else like to step up on the floor?
Actually, I think at this point, Laura, you know what, I actually kept the recording going because the questions were excellent, and I thought would be of interest to other people. At this point, though, I'm going to stop the recording, and say goodbye to everybody, and thank you for joining us, because I don't want to take up too much more of your time, Laura. You've been so generous with it. So thank you very, very much for your presentation again today.
Oh, you're so welcome to everybody. It's, you know, we really need to be